Okay, so I mentioned this in passing, I don't even remember which year recently, but I want to articulate the thought. We open Vayishlach, and I think when we're kids, what do we learn about the beginning of Vayishlach? Yaakov is going, he hears that his brother is coming with an army, and what associations are we taught to have about Esav at that point?
He's going to fight.
And what associations do we have on him, right? That's what we assume, and what does that make us feel about Esav?
He's still angry.
Yeah, and bad, right? That's, I think, what we learn when we're little kids, right? Look, he's militaristic, this brute, he's coming with his army. Right, so I want to point out that right, the issue here is very much that the fear is that he's coming to kill Yaakov. The issue is not at all that he's a military figure, because as I pointed out, I think, a few weeks ago, Esav here is presented as a military figure, and he has 400 men in his army. But Avram is presented as having 318 men in his army, or ready to be turned into soldiers at a moment's notice, so as close to a standing army as you want to consider that, plus having three standing military allies. Right? Eshkol and Mamre. So he is not described in any way as less militaristic in that sense. Not to mention, right, not that even if you read this parsha carefully, you will discover that the ability to muster military force is not viewed as a negative. How do I know that from this week's parsha?
Shechem.
Well, great. Shechem is ambiguous. How do I know that even before I get to Shechem? Yaakov, because part of Yaakov's response to Esav is to set up his family in military, right, in a military encampment, right, in two military camps. But still, right, there's a clear, and Rashi makes that clear, that there is a three-pronged preparation, tefillah and diplomacy, but also a military component to this. So it's clear that the message of Bereishit, and yes, Shechem, later on, is an ambiguous story, because while some Rishonim take this as negative, that Shechem did the Shimon Levi's actions in Shechem were wrong, who very much did not think that, the Rambam thought this was a mitzvah. They were correct. It was a fulfillment of the chiyuv of dinim, that because people had not criticized and or critiqued or taken to legal accounting, taken Shechem and Hamor, right, for what they did to Dina, therefore they were liable for violating Dinim, which is the seventh of the Shem Mitzvah Noach, and therefore they were Chayav Misa, and that's what they were doing. Right, that's what the Rambam says in Ochos Malachim Perek Tet Halacha Yudalit. So that case is ambiguous. We can talk about it maybe later. But the message clearly cannot be of Bereishit that being being at least capable of mustering military force is automatically negative. That is clearly not the message of Bereishit. To the extent that Esav is viewed as a negative figure, it's because
we already have this idea.
We know that he's angry at Yaakov, and we assume he's using that military force, and maybe we don't think it's justified, and clearly unjustified military force is not a good thing, but it's not the fact that he's militaristic. And I would push that farther. Several people have argued, and I think this is intimately connected with this point, that perhaps this explains part of why Yitzchak liked Esav so much. Right? We mentioned this. This point I know I mentioned, but now let's fill out the picture. We talked about the fact that the reason that Yitzchak may have liked Esav so much is because Yitzchak is the only of the Avot to be
a farmer.
Therefore, he requires remaining in one place in a way that shepherds do not, which requires the ability of establishing security. And Esav, already when we know he's a hunter, the line between hunting abilities and how much that spills over into
warrior
abilities is right, that line can be thin. And to be fair, once we get to Vayishlach, in fact, we know that he is a military personality. And that can be, but it's, I think now we can fill it out, that it's not just that Yitzchak liked that because, you know, he was a farmer. The truth is that, in general, the Avot are presented as being capable of military force. Yaakov only really comes into his own when he presents himself as having that ability as well, which makes sense, because if you're building a nation, you can't just be a family and a clan and be peaceful and be incapable of using force when necessary. That's not how you build a society. This is just, obviously we all want peace, but the ability to muster military force is part and parcel of what it means to build a nation. That's just what it is, and therefore it should be expected.
And what? Parabellum.
Yes.
If you want peace, prepare for war.
Correct. And that's true, right? And I think that when you read the Parashiyot carefully, you realize that this is the case. Now, I will just add one point, is that, so you might wonder, okay, well, how is it that Avram, and if it's true that part of what gave Esav this ability was that he was a hunter, so why is that we find that Avram and Yaakov, who are the shepherds, are also capable of such military force? You could just say, well, you can do two things well. But as I'm thinking about it, it is possible that being a shepherd also prepares you for war. Where would I have a proof of that? You're like, where would I get a proof
David.
Of that? Do I ever? Thank you, David. Because, excuse me, what does David say?
He says, I'm God a shepherd for my father.
He says that the reason I know I can fight Goliath is because as a shepherd, that whenever I would be shepherding and a wolf or a lion would come, I would kill them with my slingshot, and therefore I know, first I know God is with me, but second of all, the ability to ward off animals is what gives me the ability to fight this strong warrior named Goliath. And therefore, you can say whatever you want, but there is at least one pasuk in Tanakh which explicitly says, now it also happens to be that David is a military genius, except we don't know that yet. But we don't know that yet. The first time we meet him and his military prowess
is Goliath.
Is where, right, his real military prowess is at Goliath, where he tells you that his military prowess comes from A, God, and B, the fact that he was once a shepherd. And therefore, again, you are correct. There's more to it. And I assume not every shepherd was a military mastermind or skilled warrior, but I can't escape the fact that David HaMelech, in his actual justification, right, his actual explanation, he's saying, I can do it. 50% of it was God, and 50% was I'm a shepherd.
Wasn't that just him trying to get Shaul to let him try?
Again, his specific claim is that he's a marksman, and he knows that he's effective because when wild animals would attack his sheep, he was capable of repelling the attacks.
Okay,
I don't think you can escape that. You can't escape that. That's what he says, and that it worked. Okay, you can say, oh, he's just trying to convince someone. The fact that it could convince someone means it resonated as true with people, which means, you, whatever you want. The point is that first of all, I take David at his word. Second of all, the fact that it convinced people at all, yes, in combination with God, and I admit that that was probably the major factor, because that's David's speech. But you can't escape the fact that this was a taina that people listened to, and it made sense. And therefore, I don't think that we can ignore the fact that Avram and Yaakov were both shepherds, at least when necessary, are capable of becoming military figures, when at least in the case of David, he claims that those two are not necessarily divergent, in fact, help each other. So those are just some thoughts on the military power here in Bereishit. Yeah.
There's also this extended metaphor throughout Tanakh, which uses shepherds as like symbolic of leaders and leadership, where they're presented as people who either you lead the flock astray, or you let people scatter, or you protect the flock and, you know.
Correct. Now the question of which one is being focused on, or maybe both, right, is one of those things. It's one of those central metaphors in Tanakh, and it could be that both these aspects are part of it.
Right.
Though I hadn't really thought about it till now, but I think that there's definitely something there. I want to flesh it out more, but I think at least as the beginning of a thought, it is there's definitely truth.
I mean, maybe
there
may also be a difference, like a distinction you can draw between people who are like Esav, who are, you know, standing army, who are there to fight in battles and formal, you know, fights, and people who are designated as the protectors of their people, like a shepherd, you know, to be guidance and, you know, protect
correct.
Them from
it, look, it's definitely true, right? Maybe we should make this point, that Avram is, when we see Avram as a military figure, it's in defense of, right, saving someone. It's in, right, saving mode. And Yaakov is organizing to military encampment to defend himself from a perceived attack. Obviously, that's part of it. But my point is that it's not military force per se that's negative. It's context, intent, and things like that, which should be obvious, but often I think when we learn Tanakh, that's not how it's presented. And look, this is one of those central critiques, that one of the big differences between Jewry outside of Israel and Jewry inside Israel is that Jewry outside of Israel, right, has the luxury of being totally non-militaristic, and therefore often think that, you know, especially in the non-Orthodox community, they are sometimes critical of Israel because, oh, you have a militaristic culture. But part of the reality is that when you have a country, right, it's not that you love war, but being militaristic in the sense that you acknowledge the importance of being able to defend yourself and utilizing military force when necessary, you know, that's just part of life. And if that means that you have to look up to soldiers, right, that's okay, right? It's not like we don't look up to soldiers because we want to glorify war as much as it's a necessity, and we don't want our kids who are going to go to war to think that, oh, we hate soldiers, we wish they didn't exist. Right? You don't want that because yes, in a theoretical world, you wish no one had to be a soldier. But in a real world, we hope that people respect the importance of using force to do what's right. Okay, there's my Zionist talk for you.